The FBA has given Hillary Clinton a huge boost on the final day of campaigning before the US presidential election. The Democratic candidate has been cleared of any wrongdoing for using her personal email account when she was Secretary of State. Donald Trump claims his opponent is being protected by a rigged system. Here's what both of them had to say after this latest announcement from the FBI.
Hillary Clinton is guilty. She knows it. The FBI knows it. The people know it. And now it's up to the American people to deliver justice at the ballot box on November 8th.
This election is a moment of reckoning. It is a choice between division or unity, between strong, steady leadership or a loose cannon who could put everything at risk.
Now, Hillary hasn't been remarking to any great extent on the announcement from the FBI, but she must be breathing a mammoth sigh of relief. Let me speak to commentator Alex Kane. Alex, good morning.
Good morning, Frank.
Alex, if you had to call it now, who's the winner going to be?
Oh, well, I still think the odds favour Clinton. They favoured her all the way through. The Electoral College statistics favour her. I think just the likelihood of who will come out to vote, particularly among new voters, all of that favours her. But having said that, Frank, let me enter the caveat. I still thought at the time of Brexit, I thought the Remain people would just edge it on the day, and they failed. So, yeah, it's not impossible. Let's put it this way. It's not impossible that Donald Trump could pull off a very small victory, but it still seems to me unlikely.
No better man than yourself, Alex, to answer some questions that have been thrown at me here, even last week, and we've touched on it, and this morning as well. Some people are confused, slightly confused, that voting has already been carried out. They've noticed this on the news, and also this college group that you make reference to. It's not just as simple and as straightforward as arriving at the polling station the way we do, tick a box, and the man with the most or the woman with the most votes gets in.
No, it's actually quite complicated. Spread over the states, you're not actually electing, this is a very weird thing, you're not electing the president tomorrow. What they're doing is electing the Electoral College, which is about 570 people from each state. Some states work on the winner-takes-all basis, so that there might be, in one state, there might be 55 delegates who are all bound, whatever their personal views are. If, say, it was Florida, they are all bound to vote for the candidate who wins that state. But in other states, the Electoral College can choose who they want to vote for. So there might be another 55, half of whom will say, well, actually, even if, say, Trump wins in that state, half of them will still back Clinton, half will back Trump. So it's complicated. But the reality is, Frank, that we'll know fairly soon. We'll know in the early hours of Wednesday morning, probably by about 2 or 3. There are a number of key states, Pennsylvania, South Carolina, Florida, and so on. If they're going to one person, that's the person that's going to win.
It may be complicated, but there'll be no confusion.
Well, there was a bit of confusion, remember, in the 2001 between Bush and Gore, there's confusion. I suppose that's the other thing worth saying, bearing in mind, Frank. Each state, under the American legislation, each state is responsible for the election. So it's not, in one sense, I think the easiest way to explain this, it's not one election across the United States. It's almost like a series of 50 elections. So voting is slightly different in each state. The method they use is slightly different. Some machines, some handwritten count. It's all a little bit complicated. So in the 2001, you had the whole hanging chads debate, you know, what counts as a vote, what doesn't count as a vote. A lot of that was cleared up. There's usually unanimity. But what you find, unless it's a terribly, terribly close election, as I said earlier, what you find is by 1, 2 in the morning, our time, even before the polls have actually closed in America, they're actually able to call the election result. Because, as I say, out of the 50 states, there are 4 or 5 key states which will decide if they go one way, that's the winning candidate. Because in most of the other states, they're safe states. And almost like we talk about safe seats over in the United Kingdom, where something like 2/3 of seats will go to Conservative or Labour, because they always have gone to Conservative or Labour. In America, about 2/3 of the states have always been Democratic states or have always been Republican states. Put them to one side, then you're left with the swing states or states that might possibly change, which is maybe only between 10, 11, 12. That's where the battleground is. At the moment, Hillary Clinton seems to be just winning that battleground. But in the states where it's winner takes all, even if there are 7 million votes and she wins by one vote, she takes all the delegates in that state, and that's where the crucial battlegrounds are.
Can you understand Trump's argument? The FBI came in at a late stage and said the president would have some issues to... Mrs. Clinton, the hopeful, would have some issues to face about the emails. Trump was really delighted on the back of that. And then the FBI come in at a crucial time, just like 24 hours before most people vote, and say that she's got no questions to answer. Well, she may have questions to answer, but she's certainly been cleared of any wrongdoing. So she's no criminal charges to face. That must be, to Trump, the setback of setbacks. And it adds fuel to his fire that he feels that the system is against him.
Well, it does. It's not only Trump feels the system is against him. Trump is peddling this line to his supporters. What you have to bear in mind here, Frank, there are a lot of people, a lot of Trump's core supporters. This is extraordinary. These are, in many cases, are working class, unemployed, very poor people in some of the most deprived parts of America who are taking their lead from a billionaire who lives in a place called Trump Towers, which is worth something like $150 million. They believe this man represents them, speaks to them. They trust this guy. And this guy is telling them that Hillary Clinton's a crook. He's telling them that the Senate's full of crooks, that the Congress is full of crooks. But what he's not doing is offering them any hard-line solutions to those problems. And the other thing which I find extraordinary about Trump, Frank, he didn't play the trust card in terms of Hillary Clinton. If that's what he really believes, if he really believes that she is a crook, if he really believes that she's guilty of all these things, then just simply saying Hillary's a crook, Hillary's this, it's not going to apply. It's not going to have any effect on swing voters. Change that question slightly to, would you trust as your president someone who deliberately got rid of 30,000 emails which she thought would embarrass her at some point because it was full of information which may not in fact have been accurate? You will have cleared emails in your time. I have cleared emails. I clear my box once a month, Frank. It takes me about 2 hours to do it. Imagine having to clear 33,000. Had he played on that, I think he might just have had people, just not rednecks or hillbillies, but people go, that's a good point. Why did she need to delete that? Can we trust her to do this? They could have asked her questions when she was the president's wife. You know, what she turned a blind eye to, both in her husband's personal life and in his political. He didn't do any of that. It's a very unsubtle way of playing the campaign. He just turned it into Hillary's a crook. And let's face it, you know, he wouldn't have been able to say that in most other countries of the world, because you can't just turn around and say your opponent's a crook. You'd be hauled before a court. It's a very strange electoral system. I think he now knows he's going to lose, or he fears he's going to lose. The system's rigged. But what worries me about that, Frank, and it's a much bigger issue, and it's something very worrying happening in America in terms of how they approach elections and politicians. You might have 10, 15, 20 million people at the end of this who, if Clinton wins, think that they have been robbed, that their candidate has been robbed. If they start giving up on the electoral process, if they think that everything, the establishment, the banks, the businesses, politicians, government, if they all believe that they, all those institutions are against them and the system's rigged against them, I just think there could be some very nasty elements emerge over the next 4 years.
You mentioned two categories of person there in America, and I'm sure their vote will be essential to all of this. And every time I hear of them, I try to visualise what exactly they are. Rednecks and hillbillies.
Sorry,
to you, Alex, what are rednecks and hillbillies?
Oh, this is awful because it makes it sound, you know, like I'm some sort of raging elitist liberal so-and-so, which I'm not. What it is, I think maybe the easiest way is try and think of the people in northeast parts of England who would have been formerly Labour supporters, who working class, trade union all their lives, concerned about working class rights and so on, who decided that they were going to buck the trend in terms of the EU and follow the UKIP line, you know. So
are they rednecks or are they hillbillies?
Former
Labour supporters.
I'm in so much trouble now, Frank. No, they are a mixture of the two. What it's used in America, they use it, the redneck hillbilly. It's basically rural. The redneck comes from the fact that they spend their day digging or working in the sun, and so on. That's how they get it. Or the hillbillies, because they lived in Tennessee mountains and so on. They were remote. They are remote from government. They're remote from the big decisions. But these are people, again, thanks to the, well, not thanks to, but as a consequence of social media, these people have found the political world. And it's very interesting. Someone told me, actually it was here in Northern Ireland, but it applies to America and most other countries now, said, Alex, I always thought nobody was listening to me. I thought I was alone. I thought every time I heard people on the radio or television, I thought, oh, it must be me that's the minority. Then I went on Twitter and I realized that there are millions of people like me who are not happy with what government does, who are not happy with what decisions have been taken, who feel that they've been sidelined and neglected. And that's the element Trump has played to. Even 7, 8 years ago, Frank, millions of these people, millions of working-class Americans were, and there's no other way to put this, they were screwed over in terms of the bank's subprime mortgages. They were suddenly told, your mortgage is no longer owned by the company you thought it was owned by. It's owned by a company in China who are demanding, they want their house back. They want their money back right now. These people were extraordinarily angry, Frank, really, because they had no one to go to because they were being told by the local congressman, oh, this company's no longer American. We can't do anything about it. So these people just got raging, really. It's like that film, you know, Network, you know, where he says, you know, go to your windows, stick your head out and say, I'm mad as hell and I'm not taking this anymore. That's the vote that Trump has gone for. He's saying to these people, nobody cares about you, but I care about you. And I will protect your jobs, I will protect industry, I will protect your houses. He's not saying how he would do it, Frank, but those people are so angry, so miffed, I was going to use another word there, but so miffed with everybody else in the system, that someone as unlikely, as bizarre, as almost grotesque as Trump seems to be their salvation. And that tells you a lot about, the politics, what's happening in America. But look what happened in the United Kingdom with Brexit. Look what happened in Greece. Look what's happening in France with the rise of the National Front. There's a huge discontent, mostly from working class, fueled by this sense of nobody gives a damn about us. And that, if you tap into that, that's a very powerful voice. If you look at what Obama did, Obama in 2000, his first election, sorry, 2008, he actually went to a lot of young Latinos, young African-Americans who had never voted. Some of them had voted and opted out of the system. And he said to them, we can win, but only if you vote for me. I can do this. That's exactly what Trump's doing. He's saying to these people, you couldn't do it with Mitt Romney. You couldn't do it with Bob Dole. You couldn't do it with all these other people. I can do it. I'm bigger than the system. I'm Mr. Celebrity. I'm Mr. World Figure. I can do this to you. And if he taps that, Frank, if he nails that on Wednesday morning, the early hours of Wednesday morning, he becomes president.
So does he benefit more if there's a significant turnout? I know here in Northern Ireland, we get excited if 50% of the people vote. A lot less than that vote in America.
Oh, yes, that's the whole thing. People always think, you know, there's 280-odd million people that are all voting. They're not into this. The polls in America are low. That's largely because in most cases, certainly in my lifetime, and I was born in 55, so the first, I don't remember the election, but the first election I've sort of tracked back and looked at is Kennedy-Nixon, which is in the 60s. You go back to that, there was never really much doubt. If you go back to the wonderful thing about Google, you get all the information, push the button, there was, for most of those campaigns, it was pretty clear early on who was going to win. And when people are fairly sure who's going to win, they don't turn out. Even people who want to change don't turn out because they think, what's the point of a vote? People who think, oh, well, they're winning anyway, I don't need to come out and vote. What Trump is trying to say to these people is, you can do it. No, who would have thought, back in 2008, who would have thought that Barack Obama not only would beat Hillary Clinton, who was basically a far bigger name than he was, he beat her, and then went on to become the first black president. Nobody thought that was possible. That's what he's now saying to these people. He's saying, look, I know there are millions of you out there who haven't voted, and you haven't voted Republican for 20 years, you've never voted, whatever. I'm saying to you, if you want, don't sit back on Wednesday morning and complain about Hillary Clinton if you didn't vote. And I've said, if even in the last couple of days, he's able to persuade. It doesn't take a huge amount, Frank. 2 or 3 million people at this stage would... That sounds huge, but spread over 50 states. He could do it. I still think that... But it applies to maybe people, Democrats, who would have thought, Hillary's bound to get that. Trump... I remember, I think I might have been talking to you, Frank, or talking to somebody about this one, when I wrote a piece, and I said, back in February, and I said, my instinct is that Donald Trump is going to become the GOP candidate. I don't think he'll win the presidency, but I think he'll become the candidate. The number of people came on my Twitter line and all the other ones said, Alex, were you drinking when you wrote that column? There is no way this man can become the candidate. The machine will crush him. It didn't crush him. We were told that Bernie Sanders was going to be crushed by the Hillary machine. It didn't. She had to fight almost to the cusp, the mouth of the convention to get her nomination. There is something happening in politics, not just America, nothing. Even the polls all over the place. 2 days before an election, two sets of polls are telling us that Trump has got a slight lead, Clinton's got a slight lead, others saying it's too close to go. I have never, in my lifetime, Frank, I have never seen that in America. Even with the first Obama one, it was pretty clear. Most of the 95% of the evidence was suggesting it's possible that Obama could lose. But we were fairly sure when we went in, and within a matter of hours, it was clear Obama had won. On this occasion, two people, two pit bull terriers in terms of politics, we don't actually know one way or the other for definite. And that is something I never thought I would see in my lifetime in American politics.
Two of the least popular candidates I've ever come across in terms of the battle.
Oh, no, you say least yet, but going back to all when all records began, these are not only unpopular, they're divisive. They're unpopular within their own parties. Both machines have had to gather around people they didn't ever expect to have to gather around. And that's why I say when this election's over, both the Democratic machine and the grand old party, the Republican machine, will gather together to make sure this never happens again. The problem is, Frank, with only two parties and whatever it is, about 300 million voters or something like that, those parties are so big, they're trying to cater for so many competing, contradictory demands. It's now become a case of who buys the nomination, because the party has no control over any of this. But I say when this is all over, the other thing about this, I think it's worth saying about the personal unpopularity of the candidates, the fact they're so divisive. Another thing I've noticed, and I noticed it at the Brexit, you and I talked about it after on the 23rd, 24th of June, after the result was in. Something else, which I haven't seen, and as I've been around a long time, there's a hatred at the core of political debate now, on those big debates, which didn't used to exist. I remember a time, and it's not, oh, Alex, you're an old man, I go back in my day. It isn't that. I remember a time when you didn't have to agree. You agreed to disagree. You accepted, well, okay, fine, let's not argue. Well, yes, you've won, your side's won, I take the point. That you'd have arguments, you'd have ideological debate, you would clash with each other. But I never remember a time, Frank, when people just go, no, sorry, you're liars, all your supporters are liars, you're all crooks, you're all this, you're all that, you've sold out, you're owned by the bank. I never remember that level of debate. And when you have that level of debate at the centre, what happens on the ground will always, in political terms, be 5, 10, 20 times worse than what's happening at the centre. If the centre is riddled with naked, undisguised hatred of the key players, just imagine what it's like on the ground. Just imagine what it's like for people who are desperate that their candidate wins at all costs, no matter what it takes in terms of lies or deceit or, you know, propaganda or flooding the email market and text market and tweet market. That's the reality, Frank. That's the one thing that's coming out of this election. It's that, how are they going to cope with the level of hate? Doesn't matter which of these people wins, the level of contempt there's going to be for the next president from millions, 40, 50, 60, 70 million people in America are not going to accept Trump as their president and are not going to accept Clinton as their president. And on that day, that's what I said all the way through this, that's going to be the key issue. It's not what Trump will do, policy, not what Clinton will do. It's how Americans, ordinary Americans, will react. And I think that is going to be one of the most fascinating things I will be watching and observing in my whole political time as an observer and commentator.
Alex, always great speaking to you. Thank you very much indeed. What a commentary on politics, but it could only be in America. We'd never have politics like that here, would we? Alex, thank you.